stalemate in Washington.
With more at stake than just taxes.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, December 21st.
Coming up, we'll get the latest on the ongoing fight over payroll tax breaks in Washington.
Spain looks to a new prime minister for an economic makeover.
And dreading holiday travel? Well, the TSA agents here at LAX are looking to lift your spirits.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, to paraphrase 19th century poetry, 'twas the week before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring. That's it. I'm talking about the House of Representatives.
I was already.
Adrienne, who have gone home for the holidays, most of the lawmakers anyway, after leaving a legislative mess in their wake.
House Republicans yesterday rejected a Senate deal to extend payroll tax relief through February for 160 million American workers. And if Congress can't get its lines uncrossed and get to a yes vote in both chambers, there's more at stake than just taxes. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
An extension of federal benefits for the long-term unemployed is tied to extending the payroll tax cut. It's the ninth time since the recession began that Congress has gone to the brink on keeping those checks flowing. If it can't make a deal, nearly 2 million people will fall off the rolls by the end of January, says George Wentworth of the National Employment Law Project.
The average amount of an unemployment check is $295 a week. The Economic Policy Institute estimated that reauthorizing the federal programs would actually save or create over 500,000 jobs.
That's because unemployment payments flow back into the local economy right away for rent, gas, groceries. But they also cost a lot, $44 billion next year, which is why congressional Republicans want the cost offset by other spending cuts. Meanwhile, another cut kicks in on January 1st if Congress doesn't act. Doctors will see their Medicare reimbursement rates slashed by more than 25%. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Republican Congressman Bob Gibbs from Ohio is one of the congressmen who voted against the Senate agreement. He joins us now for an extended interview as part of our Midday Extra. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
So you all are insisting that any extension would need to be at least a year long. But by voting down the 2-month extension, there is the risk of not getting any extension at all. Is it worth it?
Well, let's talk about the process. Last week, the United States House of Representatives, we passed out a bill, sent that over to the Senate, and the Senate changed it. And they have every right to change it. And the way our founding fathers set the system up, we have the ability to either agree with the Senate changes or we can say we don't agree and there isn't that much difference to work out. I think it can be worked out.
Now, do you think your party and Congress itself has some responsibility in this?
Well, I think the responsibility is for us to take action. And in the House, we did our job. The Senate changed the bill from 1 year to 60 days. It's not workable for private business. And I know as a small business person in my prior life, we have to file these forms quarterly. So having a January, February, you're going to file a different form or a different rate and then turn around and do it for March. And it's going to add cost and time to our businesses to be able to comply. So unfortunately, in the Senate's haste, you know, they should have talked to some people first.
Now, tied into the payroll tax extension is also an extension of benefits for the long-term unemployed. Without a deal, some of these folks will lose benefits in January. How concerned are you about that?
I'm really concerned. And you know, like I said, I don't want it to happen. And I feel that, you know, as a member of the United States House of Representatives, I've done my part to ensure that doesn't happen. And right now, the ball's in Senator Reitz and the United States Senate's court.
Now, the approval rating for Congress right now is at an all-time low, according to a new Gallup poll, just 11% in December. Why do you think that is?
People are frustrated, just like I am, because I think because the process is so broken. I've got two bills that are bills to help improve the business climate to get people back to work, and the Senate doesn't even have hearings on them. Let's at least have open debate and vote on them, change them, send them back. That's how you make good policy. But when you go behind closed doors and try to negotiate at the last minute, that's not the way to function. I think that's why American people are frustrated and angered at Congress, and the process is broken.
Congressman Bob Gibbs, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas.
So what would it mean for the economy if a deal doesn't get done? We asked our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon, to find out.
There's some debate over how fiscally stimulating the payroll tax cut has been. University of Michigan economics professor Joel Slemrod conducted a recent survey.
We found that a pretty small fraction of people said that the tax cut led them to mostly increased spending, only about 15%, with the rest saying it induced them to save more or to pay down debt.
IHS Global economist Gregory Dako points out, though, that things might have been even worse without the tax cut.
It was partly offset by higher gasoline prices that we had in the early part of 2011.
Dako figures Congress's decision could end up carving more than half a percentage point off growth in the new year, and he worries it could be even worse if oil spikes again.
A double whammy from higher gasoline prices and not extending the payroll tax cut and emergency unemployment benefits would bring growth down below 1%, close to recession territory.
Add lingering worries over Europe's debt crisis, and yanking any stimulus now, Dako says flatly, is risky business. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. The European version of the Federal Reserve this morning offered banks as much money as they want. Cheap money due back in 3 years. Now the expectation was that banks would borrow about 310 billion euros. But more than 500 banks took part and ended up borrowing the equivalent of about $640 billion. The BBC's business correspondent Mark Gregory is with us from London to explain. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what does the strong demand, the stronger than expected demand for these bank loans tell you?
Well, you've got to remember the reasons why the ECB is making these loans, and that's to avoid the risk of a credit crunch, a situation in which European banks are so starved of money they don't have the funds needed to make routine loans to consumers and businesses. The fact that so many banks have taken advantage of this help from the ECB means that there'll be a lot more money in the system, which means that the fears of a credit crunch are eased a lot. That's the good thing. The bad thing, though, of course, is the fact that so many banks need this special help is a sign of just how serious the problems they face really are. Effectively, the normal ways they raise money, they can't do it, so they need help from the European Central Bank.
And that help is coming and is available, it sounds like, to an unlimited degree. How is the European Central Bank in the position to say, take as much money as you want?
Well, monetary authorities in the end can always do what they like over the short term. The problem only comes if the scheme doesn't work, some of the banks go bust, and they don't repay their loans to the European Central Bank. That's some way down the track. In the meantime, it's much more of a problem, if you like, the threat of a credit crunch in Europe, the threat of the sovereign debt crisis, and the immediate emergency, if you like, is more important than the threat over a longer term that the ECB might not get repaid.
Mark Gregory from the business desk at the BBC in London. Mark, thanks a lot.
And thank you very much indeed.
Now to Spain, where a new prime minister has been sworn in. Conservative Mariano Rajoy has promised to lift Spain out of its economic crisis, but it's not going to be easy. Guy Hedgeco is the BBC reporter in Madrid. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got a new prime minister in Spain today. What do we know about his plan to get the country's debt situation under control?
Well, Mariano Rajoy has spoken to some extent about his plans. He hasn't given much detail, but on Monday he said that he has three main priorities for the coming months. first of all, to cut the deficit down to around 4.5% next year. So that's his first priority. He also said that he wants to restructure the banking sector. And also, Rajoy talked about structural reforms that he plans to implement, in particular, a labor reform.
And what is the appetite for cuts right now in Spain?
Well, Spaniards aren't keen on the idea of cuts. They've already faced some quite severe cuts under the outgoing Prime Minister, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero. And those were very unpopular. And Rajoy looks like he's planning on continuing certain policies of Zapatero to an extent, certainly the cuts, and they may be even bigger cuts than Zapatero's. So this could be difficult for Rajoy because he wants to cut the deficit, but he also wants to cut the unemployment line. Now, he may be very successful at cutting the deficit in the coming months, and that will please European leaders and so on, but it's not necessarily going to please Spaniards unless they see the jobless line start to reduce a bit.
Guy Hedgeco is a BBC reporter in Madrid. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
Also in Europe today, the EU's highest court has ruled that all airlines flying into Europe are going to have to pay for the pollution they cause. The U.S. government is opposed to the rules, which will go into effect January 1st. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
The EU has legal limits on carbon emissions that cause climate change. Want to pollute more? You have to pay. For years, it's said, starting in 2012, that law goes for all airlines.
When an airplane lands in Europe, it will have to have shown that it reduced its emissions or has purchased carbon permits from some other source to make up the difference.
Jake Schmidt is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He says the EU will give airlines free carbon permits for a year. Eventually, ticket prices will go up.
A maximum of $50 on a round-trip flight between London and Paris.
But Steve Lott at the lobbying group Airlines for America says government fees are not the way to go.
This money is better left with the airlines, who should invest in new aircraft, new engines, and new equipment that will make them more efficient and reduce their CO2 emissions.
The U.S. State Department and Department of Transportation have now warned the EU it should not act alone on global emissions and that doing so could launch a bigger trade dispute. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
A new study finds people are more likely to lie when texting. Texting lets folks communicate without worrying about their body language giving them away. According to the LA Times, researchers also found that people who'd been lied to were more upset if they'd been lied to over text than face-to-face.
Really?
Yeah. All of which makes me reconsider my maybe less than forthcoming I'll be there in a minute text messages.
The research firm ComScore says online shopping is up 15% this holiday season compared with last year. And LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus says that also likely means the amount of packaging we're getting in the mail is up. He joins us now to discuss. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So do we have any sense of how much extra packaging we're using now that everything is being bought online and shipped to addresses?
We do. And first, let me preface this by saying I'm not trying to be a Grinch here. I just want to remind people that there is an environmental cost to all this fun holiday consumption.
Okay.
So keep in mind that we generate about 25% more waste during the holiday season from Thanksgiving to New Year's than normally. That's a million tons a week of extra stuff. What do I mean by that? I mean about 125,000 tons of plastic packaging. What I mean is about 744 million holiday cards that are sent. What I mean are about 8,000 tons of wrapping paper used on presents. That's the equivalent of about 50,000 trees.
Well, what are you supposed to do as a recipient of these gifts or a giver? I mean, if you go buy something on Amazon, it's going to be shipped with a box and a lot of, packing materials and stuff like that.
And that's exactly what you can take advantage of. You're going to be getting a box. You're going to be getting packing materials. Hmm. Keep them around because you can use these again. The whole trick to this thing is recycling. You want to recycle all the packing materials you get if you can. You want to use recycled papers for your Christmas cards and your holiday cards and use recycled paper for the wrapping paper. And the wrapping paper is particularly tricky because once it becomes wrapping paper, it has kind of toxic paints and toxic inks in it and you can't recycle it anymore. Keep that in mind.
Okay, so we do more recycling, David, and then I guess we can just sit back and relax over a nice holiday dinner and not worry about anything else.
Yeah, but here's something else to worry about. That is, we waste about 28 billion tons of edible food every single year. If you're having a big holiday party or something like that and there's some leftover food, remember this. The federal government has a Good Samaritan law. You can donate that food to homeless shelters, to missions, with no harm, no foul.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. David, have a great holiday.
And have yourself a green little Christmas, Jeremy.
We've got new housing numbers out this morning. Existing home sales rose last month, but it's still tough out there, no doubt about it. Consider one part of Atlanta where homes are now selling for less than the price of a used car. Jim Burris reports from WABE.
On paper, 434 James P. Brawley Drive sounds like the American dream. A three-bedroom ranch, fenced yard, a front porch, and walking distance to the best downtown Atlanta has to offer.
God help me, Lord. That's the American nightmare.
Neighbor Makeda Johnson can't wrap her head around the fact that 434 Brawley, a house that sold a few years ago for $124,000, was unloaded last week for just a few grand.
It breaks my heart, because if that house sold for $2,000, and another one sold for $15,000, then I probably got the most expensive house in the community at $55,000.
That's what Johnson says her house is now worth. She paid three times that. At the height of the housing boom, speculators thought the neighborhood would pay big returns. So they came in, driving up prices. Then the bubble burst.
There's no options to sell my house. There's absolutely no options.
Johnson lives in the Vine City neighborhood. It and adjoining English Avenue have become the face of the housing crisis in Atlanta. Since the bust, urban decay has crept back into the neighborhood, where you're more likely to see boarded windows than a welcome mat.
Be willing to rethink what a better future looks like.
Mercedes Marquez is an assistant secretary with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. She says sometimes the answer for decaying neighborhoods is tearing down homes and starting over. Dozens of homes in and around Vine City have already been demolished, but even new homes sit abandoned. That's because the problem isn't as much about home prices as it is the larger economy, says Harley Etienne. He's assistant professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech.
You can't throw money at housing when the real issue is jobs.
Neighbors hope plans for a Walmart will provide a needed grocery store, jobs, and validation that their community isn't a lost cause. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
And finally, it's probably safe to say, Adrian, that the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, hasn't been the most popular government agency this year.
It's probably a safe bet.
Yeah, well, here at LAX in Los Angeles, some TSA agents are trying to change that. They've formed a chorus, and they've been singing for holiday travelers.
Actually singing?
In the terminals. Yeah, they actually sound pretty good. Everything from I Believe I Can Fly, which
nice.
Makes sense in an airport, to What a Wonderful World, which we've got underneath me here, courtesy of the LA Times website. Of course, I think that old movie line is, every time a TSA agent sings, a passenger misses his flight. I don't know, something like that. Anyway, in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Adrian Hill. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.